Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a Democrat, and I live in Los Angeles, California.
Hi, I'm Emily Brewer. I'm a moderate Republican from Virginia.
Hi, I'm Greg Matuszek. I'll be your liberal Democrat tonight.
I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, an economic conservative Republican.
And if you will do us the favor to find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where we have blogs and commentary. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And please rate and review us on iTunes, because it brings in more listeners, which means that we have more people to tell us we're wrong every week. And of course, this week's show, we couldn't avoid calling it the New York State of Mind, because everyone is in New York trying desperately to out-hustle their opponents on both sides of the aisle. Guys, what do you think is going on the Democratic side and with Bernie Sanders and his super delegate, as they've been calling it, hit list?
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. What I love about this is it's even though he's been campaigning for going on, what, 6, 7, 8, 9 months now, it's like they've just kind of figured out there's this thing called super delegates. I mean, someone just handed him a rule book and like, hey, did you see this part? And where no one said, this is part of the process. And at this point, where it should have been like 2, 3 years ago, hey, Bernie, have you thought about running for president? Yeah, maybe we should think about super delegates. It's part of the rules. Good point. I'll get in on this. He's that kid at the last minute saying, oh, I better get some extra credit here. And he's running around furiously looking for super delegates, and he's handing out to everybody. Do you know any of these guys? Except not in a good way. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, I think the superdelegate process has been going on. I think it's since 84 is when the Democratic Party put that in place.
Yeah.
Democrats, yeah, that's what I thought. Since 1984, so, I mean, you think between, you know, since the year I was born and now, he would have figured it out, but I guess not.
No. No, not at all. But the fact that he's now telling people, and he's now giving his I don't like to use the word legion, but sure, we'll use that word, legions, like, hey, these are the people you need to go after, and he's giving names and addresses. And like, hey, you've got to pressure these people because, well, my campaign's was too lazy to do this 2 years ago.
Well, wait, let me ask a question, because this is news to me. I know on the Republican side, somebody did something like that. We'll talk about that in a minute. Sure. I hadn't heard about Bernie giving out addresses or telling his people to pressure superdelegates.
Oh, yes.
So inform me. This is news to me.
Oh, I'll roll it out real quick. So here's what's been going on. Some of his super supporters, if you will, have basically been starting online petitions. They've been basically doxing people, especially the superdelegates, that are threatening them that they don't align their vote along with how their states voted. In several cases, that they're basically going to totally dox them and put their information out there. So the Sanders campaign specifically, from what I understand, is not putting this out, but I don't think they're discouraging that, which is just as bad.
Right.
It's actually, and I heard that when I was driving home on Friday, I caught this on NPR. Yes, I'm the one Republican in America who listens to NPR.
You're that guy.
Yes, I'm that guy. It is a list of contact information for all the Clinton superdelegates, I believe it is, and the purpose is to get Bernie supporters to contact them and to convince them to switch over. Now, I am sure the overwhelming majority are nice and polite, but overwhelming majority in something this big still leaves a sizable minority that is decidedly impolite and nasty, and that's what's getting all the attention. As you can imagine. I mean, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing that I think maybe Bernie himself understands, and maybe his inner circle gets, but that the rest of the campaign doesn't. Is that right now, the best way to argue and undermine the superdelegate argument is to actually get ahead of Mrs. Clinton in total votes. Until he does that, none of this matters. As soon as he does do that, I don't think he will. But if he ever does do that, if he ever does actually pull ahead of her in terms of actual votes cast, then he has an argument, and then he'll probably win over a number of those superdelegates. But until he gets to her popular vote total, and right now he's about 2 million votes behind.
2,400,000 votes. Let's be clear, 2,400,000 votes.
Right, yeah. And it's so, a one-on-one race, so it's not one of these, you know, so Mrs. Clinton has a majority of Democrats behind her right now.
Okay, let's talk about the broader scope of the Democratic race for a minute. This is something that's been on my mind this week. I actually wrote a column on it. I don't know whether any of my friends here had a chance to read it. But as you know, I am a vociferous and a passionate Hillary Clinton supporter. And I have been at odds with my friends who are Bernie supporters for the last 4 months because they seem to feel that we Clinton people should just give the whole thing up and agree that Bernie should get the nomination because he's got the young vote, he's got the energy, and now he supposedly has Bernmentum, whatever that is.
I had Bernmentum once, too. It took
Preparation
like,
H.
I think you've got to go to a doctor to get a drug for that.
I think you do, actually.
Her name was Sally. That's how I got it.
Oh, gosh. But here's the thing. If you step back for a second, and we've got now about 15 primaries and caucuses left, but really about 4 or 5 that really count. New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, and California. And if you want to be generous, you throw in New Mexico, okay? Those are the ones where you can really say these are states Democrats want to or have to carry in the fall, and therefore it really counts who wins those states on the Democratic side.
I might throw Connecticut.
Okay, maybe Connecticut, but that's going to be okay, let's throw that in. Let's say there's 7. Because the mountain states, I don't care how many caucuses he wins in the mountain states, that's as insignificant as her winning Mississippi and Alabama. So here's the thing. For him to accomplish what DJ was talking about, which is to amass enough delegates to move beyond her in the pledged delegate count and to in any way come close to catching up in her in popular vote, for him to do that means he pretty much has to run the table. He has to win 4 or 5 of those 7 states. Does everybody pretty much agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I would set the bar higher. I would say he probably needs to win all of them at this point.
Okay. Well, okay, you're probably right, DJ, but let's for argument's sake say it's 5 out of those 7. Okay?
And he has to win
he has to win by solid majorities.
Right, Michigan.
I don't know whether you need. Okay, again, let's not do the delegate thing. Let's just talk for a second about what if Bernie Sanders actually does win 5 of those. So I'm going to just pull names out of the hat. What if he wins New York, Pennsylvania, and California, and I'll give him Connecticut and New Mexico. Okay, what if he wins those 5? At that point, me, as a Hillary Clinton supporter, I'm going to say, I went into this thing thinking Hillary was the person who had the strongest chance to win the fall election. But she's imploded here. She's pulled now 5 Michigans in a row. And if she does that, how can I, with any confidence, go into a fall campaign knowing that she could be ahead on October 26th and still blow it in the major states? So if she can't hold her campaign together to win states that she goes into with a double-digit lead a week or two ahead of time, if she consistently loses states like that, then by definition she's not a strong candidate. And so what I'm saying is, if this man wins 4 or 5 of these states coming up, the big ones, give it to him. Let him run with it. Who knows? Maybe with all the crap that would be coming at him in terms of the socialism and the communist stuff, because it's going to come at him if he gets a nomination. And anybody that doesn't think it's going to be a torrential attack is out of their mind.
You know, I got to look at it this way, though. I know you mentioned California, Kevin, but I think we've got to look at the states that'll be on or before April 26th. You know, we've got, you know, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, you know, Connecticut, New York. I think he's got to jump that hurdle before we even start talking
about. Of course he does. Of course he does. But I'm saying, if he loses New York, if he loses Pennsylvania, of course it's over.
Right, right.
Of course absolutely. It's
over. Additionally, though, those are great big ifs. Coming up, I mean, we have mostly closed primaries.
No. Everybody understands that, Greg. Everybody understands.
No, everyone doesn't understand that.
What I think But I think that the point that Kevin's trying to make is that this whole thing about going after superdelegates is utterly useless. Bernie should be focusing his efforts on winning over Democratic voters in New York, in Pennsylvania, in California, in southern New England, in New Jersey. And I think he's right, because
he's absolutely
those
right.
voters, if those voters go Bernie's way, then the superdelegates will follow, because they'll look and they'll go, they'll pull the Gandhi line.
But at least there's
an argument. Those are my people. I am their leader, so I must follow them. That's what they'll do. So, you know.
I tell me if you guys think this is totally off or not, though. So just say, you know, devil's advocate, Bernie wins New York, right? So he gets a ton of mileage, and he can make it all the way into, you know, till we come around to California. And then if he stumbles there, he's done. But, I mean, I think he could get major momentum off of the message of winning New York, kind of like Kasich got winning Ohio.
But if he wins it by one or two points, and then he goes into Pennsylvania and gets beaten
there. Yeah,
he
needs to win both.
It's back to the status quo.
I think it depends how bad.
He needs both New York and Pennsylvania, because remember, this is one of these where it's like the IRA and the British. The IRA only have to get lucky once, the Brits had to get lucky all the time. Bernie has to get lucky all the time here. He has to win all of these.
But
he can't if he stumbles in one, he's finished. The momentum dies.
Well, he could lose Maryland. He could lose Connecticut.
I'm talking about the big ones. He needs New York and Pennsylvania if this is to go forward. Pennsylvania could end up finishing both Sanders and Kasich if they don't win those states, in my opinion.
Right. And for the record, how many delegates has Kasich won since Ohio? Not states, but just delegates.
I don't want to go to the Republicans yet. No.
He's chopped a couple things, but let's go back to this point for a
second.
No, I have a point, guys.
We'll talk about him. We'll talk about him.
But I think that we're talking about a point here with Bernie in New York that we're talking about, you know, viability in the party and the pathway to a nomination. I'm talking about the will of the people. I think a New York win is just going to make them so incorrigible. It's going to be out of control.
Well, yeah, but here's what I think is going to be very interesting. If Bernie somehow ekes out a win in New York, let's say he comes out of there 51-49, 52-48, and the media starts going nuts. Clinton lost her home state. This is a meltdown of, you know, historic proportions. And the Clinton people will feel that. Now, here's what I think is going to happen next, and I think it's going to be the key test of this campaign. Again, this is assuming that she loses New York.
Go on.
Sure.
She's going to know now that she is in the fight of her life to ever have a chance at the presidency. She's going to know that she's losing it. It's slipping away. And so she's got to now go into Pennsylvania with both barrels blazing. And what they're going to do, I don't know how, but someone is going to raise the socialist thing. It's going to now be litigated. And this is a very good thing for Democrats, and I'll tell you why. Before this, everybody's been saying, oh, she can't touch that because if she insults Bernie's people, she'll lose them in the fall and she needs their support to win. And that's true. But if she loses New York and she feels the whole thing slipping away, she can't play that long game anymore. She has to win Pennsylvania. So she's going to do what she did exactly to Obama in 2008, which is when she brought out the they cling to their guns and their Bibles
thing.
That all came out in Pennsylvania.
Are you saying Orly Tates is going to come back and say that Bernie Sanders was born in Kenya?
What I'm saying is that someone...
She's already working on Cruz right now.
But you're not... I mean, you're making a joke, but in essence, you're right, DJ, because it won't be from Hillary herself. It will be from some surrogate, or they will plant stories in some papers to get traction. But the socialist thing is going to be litigated. And that is a great thing for Democrats, because if he can withstand that on the Democratic side in the primaries, let's get that out now. Let's deal with that, whatever you want to call it, in his closet now. If he can get by that, it makes him a stronger fall candidate.
All right. The earlier that's spoken about, the earlier it's talked about, and the earlier it's forgotten about.
Exactly. Well, not forgotten about, but it's at least it loses its steam. You don't want to go into August with all of a sudden people finding out, wait a second, I heard the word socialist, but I never knew what it meant before. You mean he's like Fidel Castro? You don't want that happening in August and September.
No.
And DJ, you truly underestimate how little of a memory Democrats have. We forget things all the
time. I understand that, Greg, but it's not just going to be about the Democrats. One of the things that Bernie has always had in his corner is that a lot of people outside of the Democratic Party have not focused on him and don't know him very well. And that's something that Kevin has mentioned over and over again, and I think he's right. He's been right every time.
Yeah.
I also think, however, I also find it... I would be surprised if Sanders wins New York, although it is possible. I would be stunned if he wins both New York and Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania is a different state from New York. It is far more likely to be a Clinton state than New York was, even though New York is Clinton's home.
Yes.
So
yes, it's more like Ohio.
So yeah. I mean, that's I'm not saying Bernie. I'm not saying Hillary won't throw the kitchen sink at him. But what I am saying is, I've said this from all the way from the beginning we started, I have seen no reason to believe Mrs. Clinton is not the nominee, and I'll still say it. I still think she's the nominee.
We're going back to the whole premise is she has to start losing state after state for him to be viable. There is no viability for Bernie Sanders if he doesn't win New York or Pennsylvania.
Right, major Agreed. States.
He needs
major
to win those two. He loses either of those.
And so we have to talk from that hypothetical. What happens if he wins New York, and then what happens between New York and Pennsylvania? Because those 2 weeks will actually make or break the campaign, again, assuming that she loses New York. If she wins New York, it's gone.
Agreed.
He's dead.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Anyways.
Now, there's also another... The other party will also be having primaries in New York and Pennsylvania, and they will be just as important, if not more so, because... If anything, the front runner is weaker on the Republican side than on the Democratic side, and there are actually two candidates whose fates could be determined by New York and Pennsylvania. First,
well, three when you throw in Paul Ryan, but go ahead.
No. Here's the thing, though, is that this is really going to be the first time, probably since Iowa, in my opinion, that Donald Trump actually has to play the expectations game. Previously, he could just stream with 30 or 40% of the vote and finish in first because the field is scattered and talk about how wonderful he is. But this is his home state. He has Rudy Giuliani behind him. And by the way, I just lost all respect for Rudy this week. So he needs more than 50%, not just for the delegates, although that will help, but because people are now expecting him to do this in New York. I believe if he is actually held under 50% in New York, it will be another wound to his campaign, and he will continue to stumble going forward into Pennsylvania and California and New Jersey. Do you see that? Do you all see that the same way? Do you think, as I do, that Trump has to get over 50% of the vote in New York on Tuesday?
Oh, and then some.
Without question.
I think he has to get closer to 65 to 70%. He has to do... He has to slay it in New York. Really do well.
You know, anything over 50% is all the delegates, so I'm sure he'll be just happy with that.
Well, the delegates, now it's on a district-by-district proportion, right?
Yeah, if
Yeah,
so what he needs to do is win 50% in most of the districts is really what we're saying, right?
Right. If he gets 50% statewide, he gets the statewide delegates. If he gets 50% in any congressional district, he gets those district's delegates. History has shown us, though, looking at the way other states have been, that if you can get, say, 50% statewide, you'll get 50% in at least a half to two-thirds of the delegates. So of the districts. So now New York being big enough and being diverse enough, that may not necessarily be true, but I think it still holds even in New York.
Right, and when I say 70%, I'm talking about
votes here.
Okay.
Because in my
we got to be careful.
You know, no state. Donald Trump has not hit 50% in any state so far. Now the field was scattered. The field was big. The field is a little smaller now. This is his home state. If he should have gotten over 50, this is his home state, and Ted Cruz is probably the least likely person to do well in the state of New York. New York is easily Ted Cruz's worst state. If they clone New York, they would be his first and second worst states. So if there's any state where Trump should do well, this is really the one. If he can't get to 50% in his home state, with most of the party machinery largely behind him, there's a serious problem.
So I gotta bring something up, guys. So I'm a little pissed off this week, and I don't know if anyone else saw the article about Roger Stone. Anyone hear about it?
Preach, sister.
My feathers are a bit ruffled here since I'm running for national delegate, and apparently if I don't bend to the ways of Trump, should I be elected in a couple weeks. Roger Stone says the Trump campaign will be releasing my hotel room number, so I'm none too pleased. But all I have to say is praise the Lord and pass the ammunition, and guys, what do you guys think about this?
Well, by the way,
that's why you guys have guns at the convention, right?
By the way, not that a lot of other delegates will know Emily's room number. I think we know that room number is going to be bandied about quite a lot, Emily.
You know, I do have a hot dance card.
Okay, but my off-color joke aside, you know, I was actually very angry yesterday when I read that article. And I enjoy this stuff and I get emotional about it, but I don't get angry that often. I think this is about the worst thing that I've heard in the entire campaign season.
Sadly, it is becoming more and more typical of Trump's campaign. His new campaign guru, the guy who's supposed to get him his delegates, this fellow named Paul Manafort, who is, and what is he best known for? He's best known for being the go-to American for the Yanukovych regime in the Ukraine. Donald Trump is actually looking like the 21st century version of the Manchurian candidate.
I guess, does it not bother anybody? I mean, it should bother everybody, actually.
Well, it bothers all of us. I think that we've established that. But I am sure that it bothers the powers that be in the Republican Party. And you know what? I really think Trump is shooting himself, you know, multiple times in the foot every day. I no longer think he's going to be the nominee of this party. You know, I mean, there's no way that the Mitch McConnells and the Paul Ryans of the world and the ranked Priebuses, that they're going to hear something like that and go, oh, gee, that's just Donald being Donald. They're going to go, I can't even say the word, they're going to go, screw this. You know, no one is going into Cleveland and threatening the physical safety of our delegates. That is not the party that we run here. And they are going to figure out a way to clamp down on him hard. Does anybody disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that at all. I think what we saw out of Colorado this weekend, where Republicans had district and state conventions to elect delegates, there was no presidential preference vote in Colorado. So it was basically they elected delegates, quote, the old-fashioned way. Campaigns went and said, these are our guys, please vote for them. Ted Cruz took the whole slate. He took all 34. No, I'm not.
You're kidding.
He won every slot at the district conventions, and he won every slot at the state convention yesterday. That gives you an idea of just the depth of antipathy towards Donald Trump in this Republican Party. In a party like Colorado, which does not have, you know, which is a much more, Colorado is a much more libertarian state than the rest of the country. The Republican Party was actually flat on its back in Colorado until gun rights became an issue. That's what brought them back. They're the kind of place where somebody like Trump, a Trump-like candidate, could do well, and instead he got completely shut out. And it's because of these kinds of things, this kind of nonsense, I think. This has a lot to do with his unpopularity within the party. And if...
Have you guys gone to the 538 page? It's Can You Get Trump to 1237? It's an interactive site.
I have not played with that one.
It's a blast, okay? And one of the things that no matter how I do this, okay, no matter how much I play with this, right, I can't get Trump to 1237 realistically. Sure, I could give him all the delegates in this one, but you know what? Trump is not going to win Trump's not going to win Nebraska, okay? And Trump's not going to win Montana. Okay, just not going to happen. And those are winner-take-all states. So I'm doing this, and I've worked it out, and I give him a point here or a point here or whatnot. But he can't win, in my book, and I've done this, way too late, without, anywhere between at the least 50 delegates and at the most 100 delegates.
Okay, so we talked about this quite a bit last week, but let's kind of generalize it again. Let's assume he goes in and he's short of the 1237. Sure. Okay. And I think we all know, I said this last week, and I still believe it, that all he can do from there on out is bleed delegates.
I think you're right.
No one is jumping on the Donald Trump bandwagon.
His best ballot is his first ballot. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well, yeah.
So where does it go? Do they allow Cruz to get the nomination? Do they turn to Kasich? Do they turn to somebody else?
Paul Ryan.
First question before anything gets started.
Okay.
Because if, with the Colorado result, and with what Cruz said he did in North Dakota, it's a little harder to track the pledging and such. Ted Cruz now has 8 states with a majority of delegates behind him. He could qualify under Rule 40B. Whether Rule 40B is in or out, I have no idea. There are lawyers who don't know that. But that's something that the committee could impose again. That's something that the delegates themselves could impose again. The first question is going to be, will there be Rule 40B or Rule 40B type deal? Because if there is, then essentially at this point it becomes, unless it's wide enough to let Kasich in, it'll be either Trump or Cruz. Everyone else is out.
Okay, let me address that. First of all, we talked about this last week, but a couple of things that I've read this week that make it, I think, a little bit grayer on that.
It is. I have no idea. That's why I said it's an if-then, because I don't know.
Right. Right. Have any of you read the Hugh Hewitt two-part fiction piece where he writes his take on the backroom dealings in Cleveland after the first ballot? He wrote two pieces.
Yes!
Yes!
It was awesome!
Fabulous.
I read the first part, and frankly, it reminded me how arrogant John Kasich was, and I didn't want to read anymore. sorry.
Well, he's better than Trump. Just remember that.
Well, true. Okay, so DJ, let me address this, because I think it might have been in the second part where once Kasich leaves the room, and for our audience, let me just give them a synopsis. It basically starts with John Kasich going to Ted Cruz's hotel room. This is after the first ballot, and Ted Cruz's dad is there, and the three of them start the discussion of Kasich's proposal that it be a Kasich-Cruz ticket, and he lays out his argument why he should be on top. Okay, we won't go into the details of it. In part two, after Kasich has left the room, it's Ted Cruz discussing the proposition with his father, Rafael Cruz. And at that point, they say something very interesting that speaks to the point you were just making about Rule 40. They talk about in this hypothetical fictional version where Cruz had tried to enforce Rule 40, had been successful in keeping it in the 2016 rules, but not only did it piss off the delegation from Ohio, people still were able to voice vote for Kasich, because even though he wasn't officially on the ballot, they would just do it anyways. So it accomplished nothing. And in this scenario, they're lamenting, they're going, we didn't think that far ahead. We thought if it was in the rules, people would have to follow it, and they didn't.
Well,
I'm not laying this out quite as cleanly as the article did.
As I understand the rule, basically those votes would turn into non-votes. Those votes would not count. They would be blanks.
Right, but they still don't get him.
They don't get him close
to 1237.
Agreed.
Right. So all he did in this, again, in this fictionalized scenario, was piss off people who to not go with it.
There are a couple problems with that. One, assuming John Kasich does not win Pennsylvania. If he does, it's different, and I'll explain why in a minute. Then John Kasich would basically go into Cleveland, having been rejected by a majority of Republicans in every single state in the Union, and his main claim to fame being that only 57% of Republicans in his own home state voted against him. I'm sorry, but you can't tell me that you're going to do so well winning over independents and conservative-minded Democrats if so many Republicans have rejected you and have rejected you very, very painfully and determinedly. Those of us who know John Kasich have said that we don't like him very much. Now, if he does win Pennsylvania, however, then it's a different story, because Pennsylvania's been one of those states that has teased Republicans for 20 years. It's right outside the swing range. It's when we say, you know, if we could just win Pennsylvania, we have to worry about Virginia. F this swing state nonsense. If we win Pennsylvania, we got it down. And Pennsylvania has Pat Toomey, which is a critical, he's an incumbent senator who would need to stay there in order for the party to keep the Senate. If John Kasich can come into Cleveland and say, yeah, okay, I know, I had a low-rent campaign, I didn't do luck, but the Republicans from Pennsylvania, the state that can change the map and the state we need to keep the Senate, want me, then he has a much more powerful case to the nomination. Absent a Pennsylvania victory, I'm sorry, Em, Kasich is an afterthought, period.
I'm on board with that. I think he has to do well, obviously very well in Pennsylvania, but I think we've got to look at a couple different things. I was kind of intrigued by the Hugh Hewitt article, I'll admit that, but I also think that for the Republican side, we would have an opportunity, provided he can do well in Pennsylvania, and, pick up a couple delegates here and there in California. I think that Kasich can slide on into the convention, and probably, I think that deal is not a crazy idea, because we could look for a total ticket where it's Kasich Cruz, and then 8 years Cruz takes the reins. I mean, I think that's a very, very appeasing thought.
And by the way, the flip side of that is, if he were to agree to that, run as Kasich's vice presidential choice, and for whatever reason they lose, he's then the heir apparent in 2020. So either way, it's kind of a win for Cruz.
Right, increases his name ID, does great things. I mean, everything goes well for him.
What happens if half of his delegates bolt anyway? And that's the other thing we have to realize. Once there is a second ballot, candidates can't direct their delegates to do anything. The delegates can do whatever the heck they want. And I think Cruz.
So bolt to where?
If we're throwing it open so that somebody if the idea is Kasich can play this routine by shouting his vote and the votes don't count, Cruz's people could do that for Mike Lee. They could do that for anybody they want. They could get so angry, some of them could flip over to Trump, although I think Trump would actually lose about half his delegates to Cruz at this point. And I think that's Cruz's strategy, and I think it's the one thing that Kasich's people aren't quite counting on. If Cruz comes into that convention with about 800 to 900 delegates, and even a third of Trump's delegates switch over to Cruz on the second ballot, Cruz wins.
I've got to say this. So I've been having conversations with people that are, you know, running for national delegate or going to be supporting people. And especially for the folks the Cruz campaign was looking for when they were trying to recruit delegates that I've heard, at least in Virginia, they're not looking just for a Cruz delegate. They're looking for a strong Cruz delegate that is also anti-Trump. So, having said that, they're trying to look for someone that is foolproof, not going to flip at least to that side. Okay, so, I think that's interesting to note.
If we get into this situation where Trump bottoms out at around 800, because there are going to be Trump delegates who are going to be loyal to him. So, if he bottoms out at 750 or 800, if Cruz is at around that same number, but no one can get to 1237, something has to give. And so that something do they turn to Ryan or to someone else?
Or do they just make it instead of a majority, do they make it a plurality?
Well, they could do that. I don't think they will. Here's the thing. I think Trump's best ballot is his first ballot. We all agree. I think Cruz's best ballot is the second ballot, because that's where he gets the defectors from Trump before he starts losing people to the thing and beyond. I've said this before on this program. I will say it again. We are all assuming that everyone will be making deals to prevent Trump. No one is thinking, except me, about Trump making his own deals, taking himself out and substituting somebody else that he can direct his delegates to, or at least most of them. If he is willing to do that, we can basically take everything we've been reading and said it and doing and just set it all on fire. Because at that point, Trump will sit down in the room with everyone and go, okay, if you don't want me, that's fine. Actually, it won't be fine. He'll yell and talk about how terrible and how unfair it is. But then he will...
See, that's the difference. DJ, you're talking like a politician. You're not talking like Donald Trump.
No, I'm
think Donald Trump is too arrogant.
I'm talking about the Donald Trump I know and that I saw growing up in New Jersey, the one who prides himself on making a deal.
Yeah, but deals that have towers with his name on them. He's never built a hotel for somebody else. He's never put someone else's name on the top of the building. And I don't see him doing it with this building either.
Yeah, you've never seen Senator Lee's steaks.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, guys, I've actually heard that Trump's buying radio stations, so maybe we can have him sponsor our podcast.
That would be
cool. I'm all about that Trump for president.
Absolutely, I'm in.
Oh my gosh, you sell out.
Let's stump for Trump.
It's not a question of selling out. It's a question of how much.
And what you all are missing is the fact that in Donald Trump's mind, he could then go back to all of his business buddies and say, oh yeah, you and I did this deal, you did that deal, you did that deal. Which one of you installed a president? Donald Trump won't need his name in a building. He'll have his name stamped on some president's forehead that says POT, Property of Trump. That's what I think.
Okay,
he
so
do.
Maybe he. Okay, so that's another. Okay, so we'll give you that. That's another scenario that Donald Trump becomes a deal maker and he determines who the nominee will be. We'll give you that one, okay?
I don't know who that's it would be. That's a good one. I agree.
Let me throw out another possibility, which is this. He's Donald Trump. And he's got his couple of $3, $4, $8 billion. And apparently, according to Roger Stone, they're going to know the room numbers of every delegate. What stops them from going room to room and say, what's your price?
Oh, okay, no.
Is it $250? Is it $1 million? What's your price?
I'm going to throw this out there, actually. And so I'm going to, you know, just go on record. And, you know, I've been reached out by some folks that have basically
Emily, ask for enough to buy a Michi's.
Oh, I'm down. You want to do it with me? Yeah, let's do it. No, I've actually been reached out to somebody that's been pro-Trump that's basically said, what would it take you to drop out of running for a national delegate? So I wouldn't put that past them. But the imagery I get, when I hear the Trump folks talking about, we'll look for their room numbers, okay, cool, what's their next step? Are they going to march everybody in a line to Lake Erie and, you know, reinvent the Holocaust? I mean, what are they doing? What's their game plan?
Well, that's what I'm saying is, what I'm saying, why do it with blood when you can do it with green? You know, why not just go room to room? Like I said, you've got, you know, there's going to be 2,500 or 2,700, whatever it is, delegates there, you need to capture another 150 to 250 of them at most. Why not go room to room and, you know, buy those votes for $100,000? These are not rich people. You know, these
I know
are people
I'm not.
That's life-changing money for a lot of people. And if it's not $100,000, then $250,000. So eventually, listen, I got to tell you something. I'm going to be frank with you. If I went to Philadelphia as a Hillary delegate and somebody came up to me and said, Kevin, we need your vote for Sanders. What's your price? There is a price. I can't tell you at this moment what it is, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you no one could ever buy my vote. You know? So we're all human and we all have human wants and desires. And so what's to stop this man from buying the nomination?
So now,
not a
so
damn
now
thing.
I have to stay off.
Is it illegal?
So I
don't know.
I have to stay off.
I'm pretty sure bribery is
illegal. And I am also pretty sure that I will have to stay off Facebook for 2 weeks because all of Open Fire will be Bernie people now saying, Kevin's for sale! Kevin's for sale!
Right, yeah.
Thanks, Kev.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that they don't listen to this podcast. So
guys, so let's switch gears for a second. How do you guys feel about, you know, Colorado?
It's a lovely state. What about it?
I'd like to go skiing, too. Let's talk about Trump a little bit, though. How do you feel about his performance?
It was terrible. It showed that his organization is not ready for prime time. He could not get a single delegate in that state that did not have a presidential poll. And it basically shows that he is running what they call a grass tops campaign. It's not a grassroots campaign. And that's done pretty well from so far. But this is the sort of inherent weakness that he has to deal with. Unless he can get to 1237 on the first ballot, either by getting it outright or by finding delegates for sale or whatever, he's going to be in very big trouble because even in states where he won, like South Carolina, they are electing delegates who will vote for Trump on the first ballot like they're supposed to and who will vote for Ted Cruz on the second ballot no matter what the hell Donald Trump wants them to do. Even in Virginia's 9th congressional district, I think two of the delegates are Cruz delegates and one of them is a Trump delegate. So... And I think Trump carried the 9th district very heavily. So this is Trump's problem, and this is why we all think that the first ballot is his best ballot, because after that, basically, Ted Cruz drinks his milkshake.
I never understood that phrase. But anyways.
It's a great phrase, actually. It has to do with drilling.
Yeah, I know. It comes from There Will Be Blood or whatever it was.
Right. It's a good reference.
Well done. Let's do this. We're kind of approaching time here. And I think we've covered the Republican tsunami pretty well. I want to kind of come back to the Democrats for a moment because truly on both sides... The problem right now is that there are these cage matches and there are no referees. There's no one who's laying ground rules or setting the tone for fair fights. Now, on the Republican side, they've had Mitt Romney has kind of come into the fray a little bit, then he backed away. Paul Ryan and Reince Priebus are trying their best to lay some kind of, you know, tone going into their convention that will show that it's not going to be a train wreck. We're going to have organization. We're going to, you know, come out of here an organized party. On the Democratic side, I have no doubt that one of these two people will get to the magic number and will be nominated. But right now, we're getting to the point where they're starting to damage each other for the fall election. And that does no one any good. Bernie's shots at Hillary about being disqualified or not qualified for the presidency were statements that he can never take away, even if he's tried to, you know, backtrack on them a couple of times in a couple of interviews. They are cuttable, they are editable, and they will be in a fall campaign commercial if she's the nominee. Likewise, as I said, if he does better than expected in New York, and they now turn to Pennsylvania... The gloves are going to come off, and it's going to get really, really ugly.
So
my point is, when do the Democratic Party's referees step in and impose some order on this? And I'm talking about Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and to a lesser extent, Elizabeth Warren.
Why should they?
They have sat back way too long.
Okay,
in my
first,
and I think it's time for these people to use their political leverage to impose some order.
Well, Elizabeth Warren is too busy trying to throw everybody in jail who disagrees with her about financial regulations. So she's too busy to worry about any of this sort of thing. As for the president and the vice president, frankly, why should they? And unfortunately, Kevin, you have stumbled into something that I've heard in Republican nomination contests all the time, and I always push back against it. What is wrong with a vigorous campaign where the candidates cut each other up some? I would like to see if my future nominee has a glass jaw. And the only way you see whether or not they have a glass jaw is when someone hits them. So I don't frankly think, looking at what's happening on the Democratic side, I don't frankly think I'm seeing anything that's going to be too thoroughly horrifically damaging. They both responded to each other pretty well so far. I would much rather have this than what has happened in New York City, where Bill de Blasio managed to squeak through to the nomination because hardly anybody paid attention, and now New York is inflicted with that moron as mayor. I would much rather...
Well, first of all, I like Bill de Blasio, and I'm guessing that Greg probably does too.
I like him too, actually, but I wouldn't call... I'd sit down and have pizza with him.
The simple fact of the matter is...
No. I'm pretty sure Emily likes him too. I'm pretty sure he's on her top 10 mayors of New York.
Nowhere near. I'll take Rudy Giuliani any day, though. Thanks.
Well, I would have until.
And if he listens to our podcast, I'll be at the convention.
I would have until last week.
But to bring this back to national politics,
yes, agreed.
We are moving toward the end of the show. So to bring this back to national politics,
we do have someone who's supposed to be the referee. Her name is Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Oh no, okay. She can't do anything.
She can't. She should.
She can't. She's feckless. She can't do anything.
I agree. She is feckless. But she should be doing these things. She should be having meetings, and she should be talking and saying, hey, guys. But TJ's right. Let this out now. Right. Get it now. And as long as it's not nasty, as long as it doesn't involve families, as long as we're not, you know, this isn't as bad as it can be.
It only takes one statement to really wing somebody going into the fall.
If these candidates are strong enough to win the White House, then one candidate cannot weigh one line or one statement cannot waylay them. If they,
all I can say is Ted Kennedy, Jimmy Carter, 1980. I think that Kennedy fought too hard too long, and I think that he, as much as anything else, and I know you're going to say, it was the economy, it was Iran, it was the hostages. I'm telling you, had he come out of that convention with the United Party, he would have had more of a fighting chance.
Are you kidding me? He ran against two Republicans in that year, and he couldn't get to 42% of the vote. That was not a problem of internal divisions within the party. He was fortunate that John Anderson was there to split the Republican landslide. Or he might have gotten a state and a half instead of the six states that he got. That was not Ted, I can't remember why I want to run for President Kennedy doing that to him. No, that was not Ted Kennedy. Hardly anybody to this day, people outside the Democratic Party still remember Ted Kennedy for what he was driving in 1969 than for what he was running for in 1980.
Okay, on that, let's go to predictions. What does everybody think? Let's start with Emily. What do you think is going to happen this week?
Oh, my gosh. I think that Hillary's going to sweep everything. I think that it'll be Hillary all day.
That's the most awesome thing you've said ever.
I have to add real quick, guys, just so you know, for the Democratic nominee, I trust Vegas. I like to bet, okay? Hillary's got the line in Vegas by like 900. So I'm feeling really good about my selections because I've checked them.
Right. DJ, what do you think?
I think actually the only winner we will see this week is Brian Pallister up in Manitoba, because New York is actually on the 19th. But I think Hillary will win. I think Trump will win, but I'm going to go the triumph of hope over experience. I'm going to say Trump is held below 50%, and I think Kasich will come in a surprisingly strong second. We'll see if he gets that momentum into Pennsylvania.
Greg?
All right. Seeing as Kasich is polling at like 22 to Cruz's 28, Kasich is polling in third in every poll.
I hate you, Greg.
In Pennsylvania. No. Kasich hasn't won one delegate since Ohio. You know, no, I say Kasich is just showing the sad sack that he is. and you said such nice things, too, to me. I think it's going to be Hillary is just going to just stomp on Bernie like he was a narc at a biker's rally for the next four or five. I mean, I think that's I think we have Maryland coming up also.
Delaware, Connecticut,
all the closed ones. It's going to be like Hillary land from here on out. But I do think Trump is going to go over 50. I think it's going to be Trump town, and I think he's not going. It's going to be really really close. I'm not going to say that he's going to get to the 1237, but he's going to be a little bit more on target.
Okay, and I'm going to say Trump doesn't get to 50. He gets to 48, 49 plus. Kasich has a surprisingly strong showing. It's all on the strength of the Never Trump movement. And on the Democratic side, I think that Hillary has been tired lately. I think that she's going to make a strategic error in the debate this coming week, and it's going to get a lot of play in the media. Obviously, I don't know what that is. I'm just guessing. I still think that she's going to win New York. I still think she's going to win Pennsylvania. However, I have not ruled out a Bernie Sanders Pope Francis ticket as an independent ticket. And with that, we would like to say thank you for listening to the More Perfect Union podcast. Please remember to find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com or look for us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And please rate and review us on iTunes. And with that, I'd like to say it's going to be a down week for the politicians, but an up week for Bernie Francis and the Vatican. And we'll see everyone next week.